Well, what I have planned to do tonight is to talk a little bit about my trip to Zambia and South Africa and to show you some pictures. And so it'll be a little bit different than a typical Sunday night, maybe. But we might have some things to say at the end and a song to sing so far as a way of encouragement. We'll have a few verses that we consider as we talk about some of these things and think about some of these things. But for the most part, we're just going to be talking about what we did and letting you see some pictures of brethren and some of the activities that we're engaged in. I'm kind of thinking maybe that it would be good for us to turn the lights down. Some of these pictures, we might could see them. So Wayne is getting up. Look at that. Really appreciate that. So leave that one on, I think, maybe. The one on the right, yeah, and then the rest of them. So, all right. All right, so here's a picture of Victoria Falls, and I may just come on down here. Victoria Falls, you may have heard of it. Livingston, Zambia is right on the other side of the falls, and the city of Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe is on the Zimbabwe side. And so the falls kind of runs in between them and the Zambezi River. But, you know, kind of a beautiful, interesting feature of the area. But so our work centered around a place called Livingston, Zambia, and Durban, South Africa. And I'll just let you guys kind of look at those things in just a minute. But I do want to look at John, 3 John. You may be familiar with these words. But John says this. He says, "If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth." And I really want to key in on that term, fellow workers. I believe John and I believe Paul often talk about the people who helped them go the places that they went, spoke of them as fellow workers. And I don't think that they were just using that term flippantly or casually. I could not have gone to Zambia without the help of individuals from this church, without the help of the church as a whole. I could not have gone. And so when I was there, the things that I was doing and the things that Joe was doing and Steve were doing, you know, the churches sent us. They were our fellow workers. They had fellowship in what we were doing. We could not have done what we did on this trip without the Eastside Church. And we just couldn't have done it without you. And I want you to understand that this is your work as much as it is mine. We were working together. I was the one who went, but you sent me. And I told the brethren, the Eastside Church has sent me. They've sent me to encourage you and to help you and to, you know, to work together with you so that you can grow and we can encourage one another. And so I just want you to realize that and be aware of that. My family, there's a lot that is left behind when a dad goes to Africa for 2 weeks. And it's a big job. And it's not always easy on them, and so I want to appreciate my wife and my family for keeping things together while I was gone. We'll talk a little bit about Christopher throughout the course of our trip. Christopher was instrumental in Zambia. He was on Zambia side confirming our reservations, kind of helping us find places where we would have the classes that we were going to have with preachers and places where, you know, people would be able to stay and who was going to be there to help prepare food for these people. And so Chris was doing all this stuff as we're leading up to our classes. He's a preacher that lives there in the Livingston area. And then another man in Durban did quite a bit. Some of you may know Patty and Sandy. Adam is their son, and he's been in South Africa for a while, and he was there kind of wrapping up his work in the Durban area. And so he was riding us around, taking us places where we needed to go and to our appointments in Durban. So, you know, that's not a minor thing at all. It's so important for us to work together to be able, you know, to go and do this work that we did. Let me see if I can. Okay, here's the map. All right, some of you may have been wondering how far it is from Atlanta to Johannesburg right there. And that's about the path we took right across the old pond there. It's about 8,419 miles just to Johannesburg. You know, actually, like that, it looks a lot closer than it is. But if you break it out on a globe, a sphere, it's a long way across. It's quite a ways away. We spent about 15 hours just on this flight. It's about a 15-hour flight there. And we land. We leave Monday night, and we arrive late Tuesday. you know, go to bed and get up the next day, kind of have a layover to take our flight up to Livingston. Here's the corner of Livingston right there on the border of Zimbabwe. There's Zambia, Zimbabwe, where we've gone in the past. Here's South Africa down here. Here's Johannesburg, where we flew into. So another flight, about another 700, 800 miles up to Livingston. And then we're ready to begin our work in Livingston, where, well, unfortunately, you can't see Livingston here. We had a second class with a smaller class with some preachers from Chapada. Normally, we might go to Chapada, and we could have had studies with a lot more preachers, but it was far away, and we already had an appointment in Durban, and so it would have taken us a day to get there. And then we teach the classes, which would have been 2 days, maybe 3 days. It would have taken us another day of travel to get back to Livingston to fly out of this international airport down here in Livingston. So we had some Chapada preachers come to us, but these are the two main areas that we were kind of focusing on in Zambia this year. It's not being as responsive as I would like it to be. There we go. All right, so in this first class with preachers from the Livingston area, we had about 22 preachers there. That's not including Chris. Chris was in our classes, and he was there. He's a pretty well-studied fellow, but he partook in the classes as well. So we've got about 23 preachers. And you know, one of the reasons that we feel like this is so effective, there's no way we could go to 23 churches. No way. You know, most of the time when we go to a rural church, it's one or two in a day because you're way out on rough roads and you get to a rural church and you're able to stay there for maybe a couple hours. And then if you don't have supplies, you can't stay out there. So you've got to drive back so that you can, you know, find some place to sleep and eat for the night. And so, you know, this helps us to be, you know, with these guys here, and a lot of them sometimes will be working with multiple rural churches. So maybe we're able to reach the Christians that are in 25, 30, sometimes maybe 40 rural churches who are working with this many churches. And so this becomes a way for us to affect a lot of Christians and a lot of people. And so it's become something that people keep asking us to come back and do, and that's one of the reasons we keep doing it. And the things that we're talking about is, a lot of it is institutional issues, because in Zimbabwe and Zambia and a lot of these African republics, you know, institutionalism has had a strong influence. A lot of times what happens is a school will be built by, you know, American institutional Christians from America, and that school becomes kind of a center where people are educated and trained, and then, you know, they're kind of sent out. And really, these preachers that we are working with have been associated with institutional churches pretty recently. But what has happened is the centralized structure is excluding them from a lot of maybe the work that they would like to do. Or, you know, they're kind of getting cut out of things that they have an opportunity, you know, like preachers who deserve legitimate support, maybe because of a particular stand that they take on an issue or suggest that maybe the local church should be autonomous instead of taking instructions from the school. Well, now all of a sudden their support is being cut off. And so these preachers have been associated with institutional churches pretty recently, but they reached the point where they're seeing the problems with centralizing, you know, the work of local churches. You've got this one school or one organization that's telling all these local churches and telling these preachers what they're supposed to be doing, and they're deciding who's going to be supported. And, you know, they've already been kind of studying these things, and a lot of our studies were basically, you know, we're affirming, you know, things that they've, thoughts that they've already had and conclusions that they're already kind of beginning to come to. And so, you know, this is, you know, and really this is, you know, this is Christopher's background. He's translating here for Steve. In these classes, we had translators, but Chris is translating, and he's really one of the ones who's been influencing a lot of these guys to say, hey, you know, the school should not be telling the church what to do. The school should not be deciding whether or not you get support, and kind of talking to these guys and getting the ball rolling on these studies. Also, preachers from Zimbabwe are know these guys, and a lot of the guys in Zimbabwe who have come out of institutionalism have been helping and studying with these guys. And so here's another young man. Ruben is translating for me here. Reuben, really sharp guy. You know, the interesting thing, these guys are, you know, all these guys are poor, and some of them, you know, don't have a college education, but like Reuben's one of those guys that, you know, probably speaks four languages, and it's just, you know, really sharp guy, really, really good Bible student too. Here's a picture of us going out, just kind of get you an idea. We were staying in this lodge, and we'd have our classes there, but the brethren were, you know, the preachers themselves were staying in a house about, it's probably half a mile away, I think. No more than a mile, but I think it was probably less than a mile. And so at lunchtime, what we would do is we would, you know, we'd kind of go out and we would walk over to where the brethren were staying and have lunch. And maybe just some stuff that you might see on the way. You know, Africa looks so dry and so dead, but every now and then you just catch a little glimpse of, you know, hidden beauty in Africa. That's one of the things that I really love about it. You're walking along this dusty road and there'll be some flowers over on the side. Here's just some things that I saw that are interesting. You can kind of see these thorns, and this is like a big bramble, but all in this bramble there'd be these bright, you know, pink flowers, and just kind of interesting. It's the beauty is rugged. You almost always something like that, kind of countering it. Here's some of our brethren walking on ahead of us as we're going over to the house where they're staying. Those in the back, incidentally, a lot of those trees that you see, those big bushy trees, are mango trees. The mango trees, the seasons, they're not quite ripe, but they're just, those mango trees were full of mangoes. Somebody's got a mango tree in their yard, and they'll probably end up, you know, with 1,000 mangoes by the end of the season. They look like they're loaded, just the limbs are already starting to sag a little bit. This is an interesting little tree here. You know, it's kind of sparse and bare, but if you can get a closer look at these flowers, they're actually, those flowers up there are quite pretty, and so, you know, just a little bit of scenery there. Here are the ladies. This is Christopher Lechaha's wife and some of the ladies from the congregation. They were cooking food for the brethren every day, cooking food for those, you know, 23 men and us. And so here we are. Here's the kind of the house they were staying in and the backyard. They've got some pots over here, some fire on the ground, some fires. That's where they were cooking. I think this day we had fish. I don't know if you can see that. Those are whole brim, head and everything right there from the Zambezi River. Actually pretty good. Tastes a lot like brim over here. And we always had corn. I don't know if I got a picture of the corn, but we always have that corn meal that all the black Africans I know, that's kind of their staple food, this corn mush, and it's very thick, and they can pick it up and hold it with their hands, and you know, maybe if they get a tomato or something, they'll make a little gravy to dip it in for flour, but it's pretty much grits, what you might think of as grits without butter and salt. So, but, you know, they eat it every day. And so we'd have that corn to go with the fish, maybe. This is a brother that was at the classes, a brother named Leonard, and just thought it might be interesting to tell you about Leonard. Leonard has a bicycle, and every day he goes to Zimbabwe, and I guess the exchange or the price difference is significant enough to do this, but he goes over to Zimbabwe, and he buys as much oil as he can carry on his bicycle, and, like cooking oil. He buys as much as he can carry on his bicycle, and so he crosses over this long, you know, old bridge that goes across the Zambezi River into Zimbabwe, loads up with cooking oil, brings it back over to Zambia, and he sells it. And that's basically what he does every day to get money. That's his job, so to speak. That's what he calls his job. A lot of people are in situations like that. Christopher Lechaha has what would be maybe considered a steady job. He, you know, works for someone and reports on a regular basis, but his wages are very meager. If I understood correctly, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe $400 to $500 a month is what he's making. And it's, you know, even in Zambia, that's pretty meager. You know, they're able to eat, and, you know, maybe they're paying rent, I'm not sure, but it's pretty meager. It's pretty tough. And so here are all the guys in our class here, all the guys that came to the first classes, and just really, you know, they just had so many questions. They were so interested in, you know, kind of, you know, talking about the problems and being able to answer the problems with institutionalism. I think these guys are really, you know, on fire to kind of encourage the churches that they're working with to pull away from the influence of the preaching school. So we arrived in Zambia on Wednesday afternoon, got in our rooms, kind of set up and made sure classes would be ready. And then we had classes all day on Thursday from about 9 to 5, and then classes all day on Friday from 9 to 5. And then we had classes from 9 to 12 on Saturday and sent those guys on to their, you know, back home, the ones who were going to travel that day. And then the rest of Saturday was kind of a study day, kind of a rest day. One day, it might have been Saturday evening, one day after we were done, we actually went to Victoria Falls and walked around for about an hour, hour and a half maybe. I can't remember. But on Sunday, we all went to different churches. There were churches around the Livingston area. And I went over to the Cornerstone Church, which met in a school building. Cornerstone, I think, was probably the name of the school that they met in. This kind of gives you a picture of the school grounds. This is what it looks like. So here's the grounds. The room that they rented was over here on the side. A lot of churches in Africa are able to do that. The schools are not completely supported by the government. And so if they can make a little extra money, they will often rent out their rooms for a variety of occasions. And actually, there were other churches meeting in some of these rooms along down on the other side of the hall. So there's where the Cornerstone Church meets. And here's where you can see where they sit. They're sitting at these old desks. And here's Amos, a man named Amos Simulier. He's translating for me as I'm preaching. I don't know if this is the Bible class or the sermon. But they, you know, they met in the morning, Bible class, sermon, and then Lord's Supper after that, and, you know, singing some songs together. But, you know, this is how they sat. They're sitting in these school desks and in this little school room, and that's where the Cornerstone Church is meeting. Here's a picture of all those who were in attendance that day. I think maybe about 25, if I counted correctly. So about 25 were there for Sunday morning service. So that was Sunday. Sunday evening, a lot of African churches do not have evening services because of transportation issues. But we got together with just a few people for a Bible study with some people from the Linda Church where Christopher Lachaha preaches. There's Steve and Joe. And we actually met in the home of a new convert at the Linda Church named Brian. This is Brian sitting here. And so here's some of the members from Linda, some of the men that were in our classes. And Steve taught the class. We sang some songs. When we were done pretty much with everything that we're going to do that night, Chris asked if there were some prayer requests that we needed to, you know, include in our closing prayer. And that's when Brian began to tell us what had been going on in his life the past 4 or 5 days or so. Brian, he said he apologized because he had not been to services that morning. And he said he had not been to services because he's a farmer and elephants have been getting into his crops. And so he had hired a man to kind of watch and guard his crops and try to scare the elephants off. But when they came, you know, the first night the elephants came through and the man said, "That's it, I'm done." Because, you know, the people who live in Africa, we see pictures of elephants and we're like, "Oh, they're so cute." But they're very dangerous in Africa. They're deceptively fast, and you know they're prone to be territorial, and so you know they're big and they're dangerous and they can be aggressive. And so even they're just so big. When you got a herd just trampling through a field, even if they're not eating the vegetables, a lot of times they'll just stomp the crop down to nothing. But a lot of times they'll stop and eat too. If it'll come on here. I may have to stand up here. I'm trying to see it better. I don't know if you can kind of see how these are kind of lower down. This is corn, and the elephants have just come through and it's like, you know, just pulled the tops off and ate them, pulled the tops of this corn that's coming up, just pulled that off and ate it. And so what Brian was telling us is that he had been having to stay up, you know, just sit out in the field with his crops and try to, you know, to make enough racket, either banging on some tin. They build fires. He had a dog out there with him to bark at the elephants. He had his truck out there trying to use his vehicle lights and horn and just, you know, having to sit out there with his crops to keep them because, you know, just a small herd could come through and just eat or destroy his crops very quickly. And so, you know, next time, you know, you think you're having a bad day, just imagine staying up for three or four nights in a row after, you know, a regular day, you know, trying to keep the elephants out of your crops. It can make for a long week. So that was Sunday when we went out to Brian's and had the Bible study. Monday, and actually Sunday night, here's a tree loaded up with some mangoes that are going to be ripe in January, some more flowers. Monday, we spent about four or 5 hours or so with four men from Zimbabwe. And we're right there on the border, so we're kind of close. Our studies with these brethren were a little bit different. These brethren have recently kind of encountered, it's not necessarily a new era or a new doctrine, but it's kind of being promoted a little bit by at least one American visitor. And so they asked if we could get together and talk about these things since we would be close, you know, just kind of really, really minimizing and redefining the work of local churches. Things like, you know, the church does not have a treasury, doesn't have authority to have a treasury. The elders have no authority to rule. Really, the local church has no work at all. It's all just what individuals do. And this man really seemed to be even against the idea of using the term local church. And so, you know, that's what we're doing with these Zimbabwe preachers. We spent about four hours. Steve, Joe, and I each presented a lesson, and then we had discussion about some of the arguments that they were hearing. And, you know, they just want to stand for the truth. They know this man. They have a good relationship with this man, at least they have in the past. And so, you know, they want to be prepared to stand against what is false. At the same time, they want to try to speak the truth to him in love. So that's what we did on Monday. We spent, you know, the most of the day with the preachers from Zimbabwe. They came over. And here we are kind of sitting with them, having some discussions. Here's Tenson getting very intense in a discussion, as he tends to do. He's a very intense person, but we appreciate and love Tenson very much. And then on Tuesday, we had those preachers come in from Chapada. And here's another, you know, again, kind of scenery. Here's this jacaranda tree. And when it first begins to bloom, it will just be covered in these purple flowers for quite a while. And that's actually not even as heavy as it gets. It just looks like a purple tree. And it's pretty beautiful, incredible to see. But so that picture was taken right there in Livingston. Here, we're with a much smaller group, as we said. And these guys we're not as familiar with. And actually, we were meeting most, you know, all these guys on this trip for the first time. But Chris, you know, was telling us that these guys are from an area that has not been reached as much or helped as much, and they're still very much under the influence of institutionalism. And so these guys were here studying basically the same things that we studied with the preachers from the Livingston area. And, you know, that work went well. They were very receptive. We gave them a lot of materials. They seemed to, you know, again, as we're having the discussions, there's not all this harsh disagreement or anything. But, you know, they're kind of already facing some of these problems and seeing the problems. And so, you know, they're ready to hear these things. What may be different here for these guys, because not a lot of teaching against institutionalism has taken place, you know, it remains to be seen what will happen. When these guys go back to Chapada and start saying some of these things, they may experience some very strong opposition and really have some difficulties. And it may very well be an opportunity for us to come back and actually go to Chapada and do a lot more work there in the future, Lord willing. So, you know, that was a great opportunity to be with those brethren, both from Livingston and Chapada, and just enjoyed studying with them. They encouraged us, and their zeal and their willingness to, you know, kind of take these issues on and to try to stand for the truth on these issues was just an encouragement to us. And pray for them. And we pray that we help them and were an encouragement to them as well. Here's a pretty good picture of Chris, I thought. And just we've been talking about Chris and all the work that he did. Chris just seems like a really great man, worked so hard to help us, you know, get everything coordinated, was there, and just really a great example as well, just in the way that he carried himself in all the studies and the discussions, and just really appreciate Chris. Hope that I will get to see him again in the future, Lord willing, and work with him again. I think that pretty much wraps up our work in Zambia. I guess we spent about a week there. We were there with the Chapada Brethren on Tuesday, studies on Tuesday all day, studies on Wednesday all day, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And then I believe that Thursday, so we've been in Zambia for a week, and then Thursday we leave to fly out to Durban. And so if you're wondering what Durban's like, it is on the Indian Ocean. Durban's kind of interesting. You know, South Africa there's a lot more wealth in South Africa, I believe, than probably Zambia or Zimbabwe. And so there are some really nice areas in Durban that might make you think that you're in America. This is actually a cargo ship off, if you can see that off in the distance. It's as big as it looks. Durban is a huge port. And any time that you can see the ocean, you'll see a lot of these ships just sitting out there in queue. They're waiting to go into the big port and either be loaded or unloaded. And so, pretty typical maybe beach area, maybe not as clean as what you might see in America, but there's some wealth in Durban, and so it's a little bit different. There's a lot of poverty, too. And you're driving through Durban, you'll be driving through a real nice neighborhood, and then you get on out on like a main road, kind of a main highway, and just like over here in the middle of nowhere, there'll be a squatter camp it's just where people have just went there, took whatever they could find, and put up some shanty shack, and that's where they live. That's their house. And so you've kind of got that. It's kind of interesting to go through both extremes in Durban neighborhoods. About 1,100 miles from Livingston to Durban, so yeah, there's another 1,000 miles of travel that we went through and moved through pretty quickly. And so we go to Durban for a gospel meeting with the Phoenix Church, and this is kind of the Phoenix neighborhood. If you can see, it's pretty densely populated, and this is probably like a middle-class neighborhood. You know, the houses are pretty nice. The building where the church meets is actually pretty nice. It's new. There are three floors. This ground floor here is where the church meets, and then there are offices up here, and there's a third floor. Actually, it's on a hill, and there's a third floor built into the hill, and there's more offices down there. This building is actually owned by two doctors who are members of the Phoenix Church, and they built it, I think, partially for some of their practice, their private practice, and also to rent out some of this space maybe to other doctors. And when they built the building, they basically built this middle floor for the church. And the church has a 99-year lease with them. So, you know, this they're going to be able to use this, you know, structure for a long time and use this building as a meeting place. And so it's very new. It's very, you know, very pretty modern, probably compared to what you might be thinking so far as Africa is concerned. They've got these benches in here that give you some idea of what the space looks like from the front. Let's see here. These are the elders. This is Lemmy and Danny Reddy, and this is Lemmy's wife Gurley, and Danny's wife Queenie over here, and this is some of their grandchildren. This is Lemmy and Gurley's daughter, and so we met in their home for dinner, I believe, on Friday night, and then we went for our first studies. There were two sermons on Friday night, and then we had four sermons on Saturday, and then afterwards we went to one of the doctor's homes. Actually, Selvan Naidu opened up his home to many of the members. We had a meal, and then after the meal, we had a Bible study. As we were eating, some of the members were writing down questions, and we all just kind of sat down, and between us and some of the elders, we just kind of talked some of these things out. This is Wesley and Jackie Reddy. I met Jackie and Wesley on my first trip to Durban 4 years ago. I know Jackie's family very well. I know her parents and all her siblings, and so they're just kind of near and dear to me. They're precious to me. Wesley may become the first preacher in South Africa, I think, to be supported by the church that he's preaching for. Now, there are some preachers in South Africa that have been supported, but I'm pretty sure that most of them are being supported by American churches or from somewhere else. And Phoenix has reached a point in their growth where they have elders, and they are looking to support a man to preach full-time. And Wesley is one of the ones who has expressed an interest in that. And so it'd be kind of a little bit different situation because Wesley would probably be working pretty closely with the elders. He's not preaching right now. He's doing secular work. And so, this guy may become for the Phoenix Church to take the next step of having a supported evangelist. And it's not necessarily that a church has to have that. But, a lot of times when churches reach the point where there's sermons and classes and all these kinds of things, and there's so many things that the church is providing, they reach a point where they kind of want that. They need that. Well, it may end up being Wesley and his wife, and, they're just a precious and special couple. Really love them and appreciate them so much. Here's folks, I think maybe on Saturday we had two lessons and then took a little break and then two lessons after that. Folks coming in, folks just kind of mingling between services there at the Phoenix Church. There's me, and then I think here's a picture of Joe preaching. It gives you kind of a picture of the front. They've got this big screen. They've got PowerPoint in the Phoenix Church. And so, really just kind of a church that has, some money and has been kind of stable for a long time. And big crowd. I think we had probably 120 people come to the meeting from all over, the Durban area. And here I wanted you to see this. It was really rough on us in Durban. This is an Indian dish called biryani. So here's some rice, some biryani, and some other things down here. We're in Selvin's home here, and one thing, I'll just go ahead and admit this. When you're in Durban, it's kind of like preaching a meeting in Alabama. But all the people are Indians, and they're serving Indian food. And you've got these sweet little Indian ladies who are just piling it on your plate. Oh, eat. And just really, it's a lot like, being treated by our southern ladies here in Alabama, where they're just offering you more food and just really, taking care of you. And so, we were doing pretty well in Durban. We were okay so far as food goes. And so here we are sitting around after dinner and having these studies. Here are the elders sitting over here. Here's Selvin. He's the man who owns the home. And so we're just kind of all sitting around. And actually, there are some ladies standing around, and they're kind of out of frame here. But we had quite a few people standing around involved in these discussions as we were just, people were asking questions. I threw this in. Sammy is Jackie's little sister. I told you about Jackie and Wesley. And when I first met Sammy, she was about 6 years old. She's about 10, maybe somewhere between 10 and 11 now. And I just really love Jackie's family. I didn't get a good picture of Jackie's parents, but her parents' names are Lynx and Vinny Govender. And they just always really take care of us when we're there. Sunday evening, after the meeting was concluded at Phoenix, we had Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday morning we were with the Phoenix Church again. And then Sunday evening we met with the Pinetown Church, which is kind of really taken a step back lately because several people have just kind of left the area. Patty and Sandy were working pretty closely with the Pinetown Church, and then they had to leave. Les and Linda Maydell were working pretty closely with the Pinetown Church as well, and then they had to leave. There's some other members that they had to leave. So Pinetown was really kind of growing and maybe looking to move to the next step, beyond meeting, just kind of maybe looking to the next step, moving to the next step and growing, and just a few of the people that have been meeting with them recently had to leave. So here's some of the, this is Lionel and his wife Charlotte, and then we're actually meeting in the home of Shameen and Prabhu Lukraj. This is Prabhu here, and this is Shameen, and this is some of their children. Another family that I know very well, just very precious, faithful family. And so Joe and I did the Bible class here Sunday evening, and Joe presented a lesson, or maybe it's vice versa. But Joe and I both spoke here, and then afterwards we had dinner with the Lukrajes and visited and just caught up with their kids, because their kids have grown so much since the last time we were there. Here's Shameen. She's one of those ladies. She's just going to be, you can't say no to her. She's going to be giving you good food and just keeping it coming. So here are their kids. Their kids are, they were so much younger 4 years ago. But his name is Avinash, Vishad, Vianka, and Jessica. This is their oldest. I mean, these kids are just incredible. They all, they're all really bright. I think Jessica may end up, before too long, she may end up being the youngest PhD in all of South Africa. And she's really young and really doing well in school. But they're good, solid, moral kids as well. They're really grounded and they're really committed to the faith, and they're trying to be good students and zealous students, and they're serving the Lord faithfully. And so a lot of good things going on over there. Our work this time did not put us into a lot of rural areas, did not put us into a lot of particularly poor areas. Although even the Lukrajes, might be surprised what their income is. It's not, it's not a middle, it's not equivalent to a middle class income in America. We are, much, wealthier in America still. But a lot of our work was, dealing with perhaps helping brethren deal with error and questions that they had, working with preachers to encourage them, to equip them. But, one of the things that Paul and Barnabas did, and one of the things that was under consideration when they set out on the second journey, Paul said, let's go back, and it should say, go back, not. It should say, let us go back and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they are doing. Now, obviously, that's not what we need to be doing every year. But we couldn't go to Zimbabwe this year because of the elections. Kind of when we were planning our trip, would have ended up being right in the middle of election time. And usually the brethren just don't want us to come during that time. And so what could we do? Well, we had that opportunity to go to Zambia, and we had an opportunity to go and try to encourage brethren in Durban. Because, while they're doing pretty well, they're still kind of, becoming more and more stable. They're not quite completely as established as they could be. And so that's part of what we were doing. And also the idea, I know Paul is talking about imparting miraculous gifts in Romans here, but Paul talked about them being established, and that Paul would be encouraged together with them by the mutual faith of one another. And so this would not be the kind of work that we might do every year on a typical year. But we do believe that there's precedent and there's value in the kind of work that we did this year. And we hope that, at least I hope, that you are satisfied and comfortable with, the work that I did while I was over there this year. And I've prepared a written report, and I posted it on the board, but I'm going to send probably a copy out by email to as many people as I can, so that everybody can look at that who wants to look at it. Maybe give you a little bit more information about specifically what we taught, and include a breakdown of my expenses, how the money was used. I actually have, Wayne, you can go ahead and turn the lights back on. I actually have probably about $2,200 left, and that would not be typical. But there weren't a lot of needs that we encountered. You know, we didn't know a lot about the brethren in Zambia. And another thing is, as we were kind of talking about it, there's a possibility of me going back to Africa as soon as April in 2019. And so I was kind of holding some of my money back in view of that plan, and just kind of holding it back and setting it aside for the next trip, because that may come around kind of quick. If it doesn't, that'll be fine. I'll still have it for a later trip in the summer. But again, more information will be forthcoming about the trip. And I hope that gave you some idea of what we did, and hope that it was somewhat interesting to you. Chris has selected a song. we went over there and, we went over there and saw some poverty, saw some people who were doing okay. But we went over there and saw people and were with people who had been united by the blood of Christ. And our need for the blood of Christ crosses lines of poverty, crosses lines of race. For those of us who are sinners, and the Bible says all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. If we are outside of Christ, then we are without the hope that God has offered to us through His Son. And so we're going to sing a song. If you need to respond to the invitation, we're going to give you that opportunity.